Have you ever wondered what it's like to live a life of adventure, passion, and poetry? Do you want to hear the story of a man who defied convention and followed his heart? If so, you won't want to miss this as I interview my father before his passing, the poet of life's epic saga, the adventurer of our time, and the faithful disciple of the goddess who guided him through the stormy seas. There's an old saying that says the only thing that we learn from history is that we don't actually learn anything at all. But history is also a personal story, a record of our origins and roots, a legacy that shapes who we are. That's why I wanted to interview my father, to capture his history as well as my own, and to honor his memory and wisdom. I did the interview 3 months before he left us, taken by lung cancer, in the same bedroom where he brought me into the world decades ago. My father breathed his last breath in this room, where he had seen me take my first, and where he had shared his love and guidance with generations of his family. He left behind a legacy as wild and beautiful as the nature that surrounded his century-old home. My dad lived his life with poetic intensity. He believed in the power of the mind and intellect as our compass, but he also knew that it was a strength of our collective that bound us. Love and desire, the fiery forces that fueled his journey, made us happy, and the unwavering devotion to this love made us inseparable. He urged us to embrace the unknown without fear, for the goddess of adventure was always with us, ready to take us into the depths of the unknown. My father was a source of patience and warmth, a constant presence in the lives of those who knew him. He encouraged those around him to be brave, even in the face of uncertainty. His lasting faith in the goddess, a relentless source of love and light, was an inspiration to all who met him. My dad's life was a testament to a spontaneous, rebellious dance with existence. He lived by values that defied convention. Values of limitless love, steadfast community, and outspoken political activism.
How many cults would you say you've been in?
How many who?
How many cults would you say you've been in?
Oh, Jesus. Probably half a dozen.
What's the funnest?
Thich Nhat Hanh's temple in Vietnam, you know, because you'd sit on stones that people had been sitting on for 3,000 years, maybe, you know. When the lama was there, you could feel the energy. And you had to go through a VC camp to get there, which I did every time.
Yeah.
No problem. Never worried a bit. Left my bicycle at the bottom of the hill with a Vietnamese kid and a nickel. Ask him to watch the bike. Yeah. It was there. It was always there when I came back.
I'm guessing it was like it's a holy site, so
it was. Exactly.
Suspended.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a holy site.
Yeah.
And the VC knew they were safe there.
Yeah.
You know, but it was funny because you could always tell it was an R&R center where I was stationed in Vung Chau. And the North Vietnamese regulars and the VC sent their officers to recreate there too, because there was a whorehouse every third door. You know, so it was worth the visit. My girlfriend at the time says you can always tell who the VC and the NVA are because they never pay. You know, it's just somebody's getting served and ain't paying.
Yeah, that's the one.
He's VC. But we sat down on the beach playing my little flute and passing a jug around with the enemy. Can I tell you?
The enemy.
With the enemy.
Somebody's enemy.
Well, we weren't enemies. We were just a bunch of kids.
Yeah. You're playing someone else's. Playing someone else's war.
That's it. 19 years old, you know, maybe 18, depending on who it was. But Salvador Dali would have painted the war.
Yeah.
Because it was that surrealistic. You know, you just never knew
what was going on.
No, No. I met these CIA guys that had a listening post up in the hills above Vung Chau, and they had the best collection of Marvel comics you've ever seen.
Set up that ring comic.
A foot and a half stack of them, you know. They had a grease gun that we would shoot out across the swamp there, you know, and that was pretty fun, too. I met them out on the point where the Mekong River comes into the South China Sea, and I was playing my flute, and one of them was playing a saxophone, and the other a trumpet, and we were sitting on different rocks making music. We thought we'd maybe get together.
Make a band.
Make a band together. That's it. Get the band together, you know. And they smoked really good weed, too, so, you know, it was a fact that they helped me to meet the guy that I got mine from after that.
CIA is always good with that.
Yeah, well, they are. Yeah. You can count on them for that kind of shit, you know. The Air America landed in Vung Chau all the time. And we were told that those were the coke runs, you know.
They pay for this war somehow.
That's it. That's just how they
paid for this.
That's just how they paid for it. The U.S. government decided to cut way back on financial support for South Vietnam. So overnight, It was like Rexall Drugs had moved a van into town.
Yes.
Because up until then, you could buy weed.
Yes.
And you could get a little ball of opium because Papa Song liked both of them.
Yeah.
And that was it, period. These guys rolled in and they had heroin and cocaine and uppers and lowers. And, you know, it was tough for the guys because a lot of them got badly strung out because the prices were bargain basement, even though that was how the South Vietnamese government was financing its effort in the war. By getting American GIs.
I mean, it was a win-win situation, really.
Yes.
You get them hooked and obviously they're not going to be in top fighting shape.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So it was remarkable. It was overnight. You know, as soon as the funding changed, all of a sudden the market just opened up now. So, and it got worse after I left. I got discharged in February of 69. Started at the phone company in Pennsylvania in March. So had our 1950 DeSoto and we drove from Colorado Springs south to the border and then west to the ocean and then north to Seattle and then east to Pittsburgh. 6,500 miles. I had to change a water pump in Montana, but I paid $150 for this car.
You only get $2.
Yeah, well, that's right. You're right. Yeah. But in those days, you could live on that. We had a two-story apartment that we paid $60 a month for. And with that kind of prices, you know, we could afford to have our own place.
Yeah.
We stayed with your grandparents for 2 weeks. And I just couldn't do that anymore. No.
Mess well.
No. Roy and I didn't. You know, he liked to tell Irish jokes. I would tell him I'd back to him and change it to Presbyterian. So, you know, we were not on the same page. But he was very glad that I took his daughter off his hands.
Classy gentleman.
Yeah.
He was all culty, too, though. He was in Stonemason?
Yeah, the Masons.
The Masons, or whatever that is.
Yeah. Masons. And the Rose, geez, I can't think of the name offhand. There was another fraternal group that he was a part of that I wasn't interested in. Although they made me join it when I went to Guam. Geez, why can't I? It's just a stupid. Well, it doesn't matter.
But they got you.
Doesn't matter. They did.
Another cult got you.
They did. You know, I had to give a speech and pay $150.
I love the group. They get the money. Where do you need the money?
It was a big deal with the Chamorros. I can see their symbol even, but I can't think of the name of it. It's the trouble with getting old. Sometimes words fall right out of your brain.
I'm in my 40s already.
You're 42 today?
I'm 41.
41.
41.
41.
I thought the place to hold it since I was born, literally.
Right here.
Where you're sitting, yeah.
That's right, where I'm sitting. That's right. That's right. When your mother's water broke, it went over my left shoulder. You wanted out. You were under a lot of pressure.
When you guys were in Oregon, were you a part of that? Was that group you guys were part of down there?
We were part of a home birthing center.
Right. I thought you were in the Asian one down there.
Well, a Nichiren and Shoshu Buddhist.
Yes.
You're right. I admit to a certain amount of that, but that was in Colorado.
That was in Colorado. But
before I got out of the Army, and the Nichiren and Shoshu were around.
Yeah.
You know, but they were funny. They're all Korean, and they insisted that you couldn't worship without proper equipment.
And what's the equipment?
Well,
that's
the lacquer boxes to keep your blood beads in and all this kind of crap.
You know. I'm assuming they will happily supply these with a small cost.
They will happily supply you for a not so small
cost. Not so small cost, exactly.
So I had strange cherry pits.
Yeah.
Right? Plain old cherry pits strung together. And I argued with them that these were every bit as adequate as anything they were offering. So I said, this is what I'm going to do.
Be accurate.
That's right. Yeah. You know, so they didn't take my attitude.
Yeah.
But we studied with a lot of different groups through the years. Rosicrucians and the Mormons at the same time.
That's an interesting combo.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see kind of similarities between the groups, I guess, and like the weird secret.
It turned out they were both cults.
I guess that's where they share them.
Just for starters, they were both cults. They both lied to you.
What good religion doesn't?
Yeah, well, that's exactly. This was before the Mormons had agreed that blacks were 100% human.
Right.
You know, and
they still try to bury that.
Yeah, they hadn't given up on their restrictions on women yet.
Yeah.
So when the Mormons gave us a tour of their facilities, they showed me the mating halls and they showed Rocky the kitchen.
Yeah. So that went over well.
Yeah. Oh, You can just about imagine how that went over. But we met Randy Bachman and Burton Cummings, two leaders of the Bachman-Turner Overdrive, Canadian band.
Yeah.
You know, good band.
Yeah, familiar.
And he had a recording studio in Blaine, and I hadn't realized it, but he was a hardcore Mormon.
No, I didn't realize that either.
And had a story about how they anointed his grandmother with oil and made the cancer go away and all this kind of stuff. But at the time that we went to this Mormon group, we were also studying with the Rosicrucians, and they were teaching us how to see auras.
Right. I do like a lot of the Rosicrucian stuff.
I appreciate it.
And a lot of it's been, I don't want to be too fringe, but been proven in quotation marks. Astral projection. It sounds crazy as hell.
They claim to send letters from here to Salt Lake City actually. And they get there.
That'd be great.
You know, the paper would be hot.
Oh, the actual physical.
Oh, yeah. Topic. Yeah. Oh,
that's nice.
Trail teleported.
Yeah. Teleported.
Yeah. So.
Looks like an email. It's great.
Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. So they were teaching us to see auras. And as a result, Randy Bachman looked like the entrance to the carnival. Colored lights just, you know, it's huge.
Yeah.
15, 20 feet of colored lights. And these six Mormon guys were up there. And they had these little gray shrouds, you know, this almost no color at all, a little thin thing. And just the contrast was pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
It was. It was fun.
What an amazing experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely right. But the Mormons could not answer my five questions. They sent the Council of Elders into our living room, explaining to me that God had spoken to them directly on my behalf and said, don't worry about it. Baptized on such and such a date.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. That's right. I says, not unless you can answer these questions.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to know why women were
excluded,
basically. Why sex was not allowed unless you were playing on a baby. Why the whole black thing was.
Yeah.
I don't remember the other ones. It was insignificant at this point. They had no answers for any of them, as you can well imagine. So we didn't hang out with them anymore.
Yeah.
They had been sending two missionaries once a week to our house for about 6 months, and they were always cute young girls, which Rocky said was on purpose. To keep me interested there, you know. But the Rosicrucians were more fun, but they just wanted to get laid too. So, on the ultimate result,
that's original. That's one of the original sex cults.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
When you look back.
Exactly, right.
Most theories think that Christianity began as a
sex cult.
Well, as a sex mushroom cult.
No objections to that.
No problem with that. Just you guys kind of took it a little far.
The pretensions got to be too much. They have what they call the Oath of Backstrom. And before they'll teach you much as a Rosicrucian, you have to take this oath, which basically says you'll never use your magical energies to influence any physical events on this plane.
Right.
And I had aspirations of being a politician at that time, more so than I do now. There's no way I'm not going to use everything I got here. You know, so I wouldn't take the oath. Rocky did. So they taught her lots more than, you know, and she won't tell me any of it.
No.
But I'm sure it's bullshit.
Yeah, you know, that's all I use it.
Yeah,
I look at magic as in, I believe in magic, in the fact that magic is only physical processes we can't explain with today's technology. If I showed you a cell phone when you were a kid, you'd be like, what kind of fucking wizard is this?
Arthur C. Clarke said, any modern invention would, to our forebears, seem like a magic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, any of the kinds of your cell phone, magic.
To a degree, although they have found recently, like Neanderthal caves and caves like that, is that the pictographs, and they actually had like plaques when placed around the fire. They actually did this with an actual campfire, like resimulated it. Mm. It actually creates moving pictures.
Oh, very
so
nice.
They were literally sitting there watching their own TV back then.
Yeah, I like that. So I got a questionnaire from my work, and they wanted to know if there was anything about me that my fellow employees are not likely to know, accomplishments or whatever, you know. So I told them I delivered a couple of babies. I told them that I officiated in a number of weddings. I told them I wrote a 563-page manual on engineering and construction of copper or in Fiverr.
In case they want to read it.
Yeah, in case they want it. Well, there's actually at least one of the fellows that's on my team who has a copy. And why is it? I can't think of the other thing. I'm sure it was important.
You met Ravi Shankar.
No, I didn't mention that. But that was cool. That was cool. In just a little chamber music hall, room for maybe 50 people, cushions on the floor, you know, Ravi and his tabla player and the lady that played the one-string banjo there. But it was very cool.
Intimate.
Yeah, intimate.
Intimate concert.
Yeah, although I was at another intimate concert for the Mothers of Invention, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention.
Yeah,
during their baby doll period when they do weird things with plastic baby dolls on the, you know, but it was just excellent music.
Yeah.
You know, Frank Zappa was a miracle man. And that was maybe 50 people in this loft in Louisville, Kentucky. So way cool show. This was late 67. When I got back from Vietnam, I spent a couple of weeks in San Francisco and I missed the summer of love. I was in time for the autumn of panhandling.
It's still going on.
It's still going on, yeah. But the hippies had all started to get cold and hungry. And so it wasn't as much free love going on as there used to be, you know. And when I left Vietnam, I had a name and an address in San Francisco. Look up this guy, says when you get there. So I didn't have anywhere else to go when I got to San Francisco. So I went and looked this guy up. And not only did they invite me in and let me stay there for as long as I wanted to, but on that very night I got there, they played 5 albums that I had never heard because the Army wouldn't allow them in country. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, The Doors' first album, Jefferson Airplane, Cream.
They were banned, by the way.
Yeah. They were too psychedelic.
They're too psychedelic.
Yeah, it was like, you saw the Adrian Carnauer thing.
Yeah.
Right, Good Morning America, whatever. That was the truth.
Fast forward today, and if you go into a grocery store, those things are playing.
Yes, exactly.
It's just.
Well, and the Army didn't pay attention because they allowed Revolver, the Beatles album, on their jukebox in the USO. And there are several very psychedelic songs on this.
Well, they went through, the Beatles went through a very psychedelic time.
Yeah, they did. So those songs were played more than any other in the whole, but that was Vietnam. I had extended for 60 days while I was in Nam because I wanted a holiday during Christmas. So I didn't make it to the end of it because I was arrested by the CID and accused of sabotaging helicopters.
Nice.
And I found out later they arrested everyone
in
the country who knew how to fix this particular piece of equipment, which was only 7 of us.
Right.
You know, that's why they paid us some. Well, they didn't pay us shit. I think I got $65 a month or something. You know, they made me shave off my mustache, which they weren't happy about with anyway, and told me I was going to be shot.
For sabotage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it just because you guys could fix them, or was there actual sabotage?
No, there was actual sabotage. Yeah, somebody did something bad.
Yeah.
But it sure as fuck wasn't me.
Yeah.
You know. So this major came in to see me. He says, don't worry about it. This is just the Army's way. He says, rather than figure out who specifically did the deed, we're just throwing you all out of the country. We'll get a whole fresh crop.
I mean, honestly.
You know, that's it. We'll get a whole fresh crop. So when I got to San Francisco, because they put me on a plane immediately, and they didn't know anything about it in San Francisco. They just gave me my holiday pay.
Because
you
were still in it.
I had 14 months to go. So I was due to go to Fort Knox after the holidays, as a matter of fact. So it turned out they just gave me an extra holiday. Yeah. It only scared me to death briefly. And I had to grow my mustache back. It was an awkward thing because the Army had experimented with allowing facial hair for 6 months while I was in Vietnam. So I immediately lost my ID and had a fresh ID made as soon as I grew the mustache.
Right. Yeah. That way,
I had to look like that.
Yes. That's good.
It worked.
You have to look like it.
And the first sergeant in Fort Knox was just beside himself.
His
veins just throbbed.
He's like, goddamn. Found a loophole.
Uppity son of a bitch. Yeah, I did. And he couldn't make me get rid of it.
Yeah.
You know, the same problem when I started with the phone company. There was no one else in this hole with 350 employees. None had any facial hair at all.
What was that?
In Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but why? It's just because.
Just because it wasn't acceptable. So the foreman said he was going to have a couple of his boys hold me down and shave it off.
Yeah.
And I told him, I looked you right in the eyes, I said, I'll break both your arms if you try it, both of them. So he backed off. He didn't treat me really harsh.
I could imagine. Oh. After threatening to break both of those.
Well, come on. Yeah. He threatened my mustache, for Christ's sake. So, yeah. Hard times.
Hard times.
Ultimately, even your grandfather grew a mustache.
Yeah. You know?
So, yeah, there's just times change. Yeah, you know, there's real prohibitions for a time about such things.
Yeah.
Made no sense at all. You know, when I was in high school, they wouldn't even let girls wear pants. When I was in high school, they wouldn't do this. The fad was to turn up the back of your collar and your...
Yeah.
You know, your button down
shirt. I've seen Grease.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Good. That's right. That's right. Well, that was a thing.
That was a thing.
Oh, yeah. And they'd grab you and make you fold it back down again. And, you know, it was pretty funny, really, with the rules that they decided to have. Almost every boy in my class had a boot knife or a big pocket knife.
Today, you're going to school with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I wore Wellington boots.
How'd you get
and I had a
metal detectors?
I did. I don't think they were invented quite yet. No. Jeez. I remember the earthquake, 6.5, I think it was. I'm in this two-story brick high school building. I was under my desk. As soon as it stopped shaking, I was out that door.
Yeah, that was Seattle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Vashon Island.
Vashon.
Yeah, it was creepy. A lot of the neighbors lived down on the beach over quite a steep bank, and the only place to park their cars was on this cantilevered structure that each of them had built.
Right.
Up at the road level. They parked there, and then they walked down the steps to their house. A lot of those cars ended up in those houses. Those things didn't hold up so well in the earthquake. Ah, yeah. I had asthma the whole time I was a kid. Missed all of third grade.
So the whole
being, you know, having the homework sent home.
Yeah.
Reading a lot of books. When I decided to join the Army, I was worried that the asthma was going to keep me from it.
Yeah.
I had been sitting in the day room of the Olympic Junior College.
You joined before the draft, right?
Yeah. Well, they may have been in the draft. I wasn't waiting for it.
Yeah, they'd started.
They did not have the lottery.
They had the lottery.
No.
Yeah.
No, they didn't. They had it the year I got out, and my number would have been 13.
Draft you.
So
you got in and out of here.
Yeah, so anyhow, I'm in the day room at Olympic Junior College. Gotten tired of playing hearts with a bunch of guys and picked up a newspaper and read a story about a reporter who had been embedded with the U.S. Army in Vietnam and wrote about the big battle that they had been in. They've since made a movie out of that story called We Were Soldiers with Mel Gibson. So anyway, it was a real thing. He really did write the story, and I really did say to myself, I'm going to go down and enlist. So I thought for sure I was going to have trouble with
that. That's a good piece of writing right there.
Yeah, that's right.
He got you.
He did.
It's good propaganda.
He got me. Well, it was a very patriotic
thing.
Yeah.
During that time period, too.
Sucked me right in. This was 65, late 65. I was so worried about the asthma tripping me up that my blood pressure was high.
So stressed out.
So I had to go to the doctor every day for a week and get my blood pressure taken to prove that I wasn't my heart wasn't ready to explode. And nobody ever said anything about the asthma.
It looked right past.
And I never had a problem.
They're good at that. Really old time then.
Yeah. Well, basic training, you know, I had no difficulty with any of the physical requirements. Although it was easier for me than for a lot of the guys in basic training because the Army discovered I had two aptitudes right off the bat. One, I could carve meat because I didn't cook on a fishing boat. And two, I could direct marching troops. So I got to be the guy that said, yes, pace, this, there, and the other. Whenever they had a parade, they put me right front.
Yeah.
So that everybody would line up on me everywhere. So, yeah, it was a weird attribute.
Yeah.
You know? It's a good thing I didn't get drafted because when they gave us the tests to see what you were best at, I was best at cryptography, which is to say they taught me 8 Morse code letters, and then they started firing them at me. And I was almost perfect.
Yeah.
Almost. Close enough that if I had gotten drafted, that would have been my job right there. You know. But as it was, the recruiter gave me a real nice list of what was available, and that included the aviation electronics, communication, navigation, and stabilization all wrapped up in one. So I signed up for that, and I kept my ass alive in Vietnam. It was when they sent us out to do work, they sent a squad of people to protect us.
So make sure all the stuff's getting done.
Yeah, well, and that they're rather expensive technicians who wouldn't survive the experience. So we had really
simple,
really crude computers running hydraulic systems.
So I can imagine the computer was like,
It was the
mid-60s. You know,
about the size of his, probably less than a smartwatch. Of all of the black boxes I worked on, everyone that had a computer that it was in a sealed compartment that we weren't allowed to touch.
No, yeah.
You know, just your
top secret type stuff going on in there, yeah.
Yeah, there's top secret shit going on in there. So anyway.
You said once you tried to join like the CIA.
Oh, I do.
You got blacklisted.
Yeah, NSA.
NSA.
NSA. And I would have had an extra year if I'd gotten it. Because as it was, the enlistment was only 3 years and NSA was 4. But it turns out that my girlfriend at the time, whom I was engaged to, had an aunt in East Berlin.
And that was enough.
That was all it took. Disqualified my aunt.
Distant relative and done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And she broke up with me when I got to Vietnam, so I didn't mean anything, but I got a Dear John letter, wrote some awful poetry, and then went out and got laid, so, it wasn't so bad.
And you didn't have to deal with the NSA?
And I did not have to deal with the NSA, not have to do that extra year.
Yeah.
And when I finally did get out, while my credentials were impressive to the phone company, they didn't need a technician. They needed pole climber, $2 an hour.
So $2 an hour.
My God, was a pole climber for $2 an hour. They hired another guy the same day, and he got $2.15 an hour because he could write down that he had driven a truck, and I had never driven. Actually, went joyriding in Vietnam a couple of different times in trucks, but
not officially.
No, not officially. So that's cool, you know, because they taught us both how to climb poles on the same day.
Yeah.
And this was the funniest guy. He was like an inchworm. His feet caught up with his hands, but they didn't know what to do with his hands.
Just kind of stuck
his ass poking out in the wind there. You know,
and he too far.
He could not get climbing down at all, you know, and I went up like a monkey.
Yeah.
You know, no problem. In those days, they taught you to climb first and then belt in when you got where you were going. When I climbed really big poles, like a 95-foot pole is really big around the butt.
Yeah.
You know, and you had to borrow your buddy's safety belt just to get
around the bottom.
And get around it. And you'd have to do that all the way up. So,
yeah, I'm going to take a pass.
$2 an hour? Second week at $2 an hour. I just understood that I was in the union.
Yeah.
Foreman says, okay, Baker, climb that pole and do this and that. And I'm looking up there, just 95-foot pole. Okay, I went up, did this and that, came back down again. He says, okay, now go do the next one. I says, wait a minute, I'm on a 6-man crew here. I might be the new guy, but it's fair, this someone else. Oh, no, I says, you can turn them down if they're over 45 feet.
Well, that would have been nice to know.
Well, by then, I'd already got my balls all tight, so I could do anything. Yeah. So me and the foreman did the whole job, because he did climb, but it was just him and me. But that's all right, because it turned out that I was only on the line crew for 6 months. Anytime they had a death-defying feat required, they'd send my sorry ass out to do it.
You see, that's it. You set the status quo.
I did.
In the beginning, too early.
No, that's
too early, man.
That's it.
Ease into it. Be like, eh.
So, but it was a union thing, and therefore every time a little bit better job came up, I just pounced on it like a June bug. So, pretty soon I was installing phones. Then I was teaching guys how to install phones. And then I went into engineering. One winter day, it was so cold that my hands didn't work. So I'm climbing down the pole using my wrists. And of course, the pole's just frozen solid, so you're getting a 1/16 of an inch of poke, so you better hope you're
actually making
your ears sharp. Yeah. So I swore any job that got me away from this, I would take. Went into the union shop. There were two jobs. There was an inside plant switchman's job and an outside plant engineering aide. And I just flipped a coin. I was an outside plant engineering aide as quick as that. And the union was not happy because there were two other guys who had been splicers for 17 and 15 years each. And they wanted that job, right? So they ended up creating two new jobs for them, which was cool because, you know, I didn't know splicing either.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from them. And although we were even Steven, and I swore that I wasn't going to wait around for promotions the way these other guys seemed to. The guy I was an aide to had been an engineer aide himself for 10 years. And he finally got me to help him out. Now I can demand respect, he says. I said, myself, shit, I'm going to have your boss's job.
Three years
is up. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, when I transferred to Oregon, that's just what I was an assistant district engineer. So, you know, it was worth the move. When we moved from Pennsylvania back to Oregon, it was a direct transfer because the same phone company owned both of them.
You had Michelle, the oldest.
And Michelle Rose.
Michelle and Heather. Heather wasn't born yet.
Not yet. No.
She was born in Oregon.
In Oregon, yeah.
My closest sister.
Yeah, we had a miscarriage between Rose and Heather. I'm sure caused by a really bad exhaust system in the Corvair. Anybody that owns a Corvair deserves what they get.
I don't know if they still make them.
Yeah, I don't think so. I saw one just the other day. Rattling along, yeah. Sounded just like your grandmother, Rocky's mother, had an automatic Corvair that had the shift as a lever on the dash.
Oh, yeah, like the...
This, I have never in my life driven a more gutless automobile than this.
Couldn't
it scare you to death coming to a freeway?
Yeah.
For fear that you'd never get up to freeway speed.
That's funny.
Oh, man, it was terrible. Actually, Rocky's mother, Charlie, is real nearsighted, and he took it out and ran it into something. So
that's better off for everyone.
Yeah, he
took care of the problem.
He took care of the problem. So we were in Oregon in 72, 73, well, until 76, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
We were in three different places there. Commuter on a motorcycle most of the time. 360 Honda.
Safe.
Hot bike, yeah.
Just throw the kids on the back.
Yeah, I know. No, although I took your mother on a vacation up to Crater Lake on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. You know, we were cruising up there in the dark, and all of a sudden, the power went out. The lights went out.
The lights went out.
Flying down the road, 55 miles an hour. Absolutely dark. Anxious space. It was a piece of shit all motorcycle. Yeah. So, you know, I ended up wrecking it several times. Once really thoroughly, though.
Yeah.
So it never went back together again. My mother was so pissed, she kicked me right in the knee, right in the road rash. I came in and told her I busted this mic up, and she'd been trying to get me to get rid of it for some time. So it came apart. It did.
It took care of itself.
It did. It broke in two. So no more of those. And I borrowed a friend's motorcycle and then I wrecked it. So I kind of gave up. I got a trail bike. And that was the one your mother sold out from under me. She didn't wait.
I'm going to take care of this.
That's ball. It. So I went to do a contract.
This isn't going
to
go away.
In Fresno. And while I was gone, she sold the bike. That's cool. I went to four wheels after that. Yeah, I'm going for brain scan tomorrow.
Over in go get it by the used car and meth lab.
Center. That's just
an odd place.
I've been stopping at the used car places so get your mother to sit in various cars to see if she can find one that she can see out of. I was thinking about Googling what kind of car little Asian women drive.
Yeah.
You know, because there's got to be a whole lot of women that are Rocky size.
Well, I mean, there's half the world that's below 5 foot. It's,
right.
They drive something.
Exactly.
We get her tuck tuck.
Yeah.
We get you in the back, little sidecar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. I've tried to interest her in some of those things. No. I was elected to represent San Juan County 8 times to different state conventions. All the 2 of them Democrat. But I was chairman of Whatcom County's Republican platform committee in 1980 when Ronald Reagan was trying to get elected. I was trying my damnedest to keep that from happening.
If you would have done the Rosicrucianist thing,
well,
could have had the powers.
We
could have been something. Could have been the next Eric Carter.
If it had been fair, we'd have been fine. We had a day-long convention in Whatcom County, Bellingham, and for 6 hours, I stood on the platform hammering out the various planks of the platform.
Yeah.
At least 6 hours, 1,200 Republicans. So it's time to elect the delegates. John Anderson was the anti-war choice. So we elected 51 delegates out of 62. 51. Pretty goddamn impressive. All college kids.
Yeah.
Well, except for myself, of course. In any event, right after that polling was counted, 7 Reagan people stood up and said they lied.
That's fitting for
exactly.
Reagan.
Fell on their swords right in front of everybody. Blood on the floor. The chairman stood up and says, well, that negates the entire vote. So we're going to have to rehold this vote in 2 weeks.
Well,
don't hold college kids together with that kind of bullshit.
No.
And they were so frustrated because they had gotten 51 delegates and then two weeks around came. We got one. Me.
Yeah.
They felt obliged to send me.
Yeah.
Because I had been chairman of the fucking platform committee after all, so they wanted me to represent, but not a single other Anderson delegate. So,
yeah.
You know, that duplicated itself in the rest of the country. It's no wonder Ronald Reagan got to be president, even though in his day he was no better than Donald Trump. Crowning achievement was Death Valley Days, personally.
Yeah.
It was a TV program that he hosted. And I just, you know, he was known as Ronnie Reaguns when he was governor.
Oh, yeah.
And he took his free university away from California students.
They took the solar panels off the White House.
Oh, yeah.
That early on.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
They were commercially.
Jimmy Carter was trying to get a solar panel. But this was while Reagan was still governor.
Yeah.
He was destroying people's lives because he didn't like the protests. Because here I am paying these people to protest. He's saying free university.
Oh, I see. There is.
Right? You know, and there are abusing that free university thing by using
their right to speech.
Very pro-war.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it was a disappointing time politically. Shortly after I got back from Vietnam, they killed Martin Luther King. And then later on that year, they killed Bobby Kennedy. And it was a real disillusionment just all the way around. We never went to the 68 convention. We skipped Woodstock too, speaking of.
Yeah. Well, you guys were pretty close to Woodstock.
We were. We were about 150 miles away. But Michelle was only a month and a half or so.
Not the best place for a month and a half year old baby.
No, not at all. So we thought, oh, what the hell, is this another concert? And we'd been to one a few weeks earlier, in fact, that Rocky's folks had babysat for. So, you know, it wasn't like we were missing out on
close to actual Woodstock during that time period, right?
Yeah, we were in Western Pennsylvania, but that's not that much of a drive to Woodstock, New York. Yeah, and that was a nice part of the world. It was full of Pennsylvanians. Half of our neighbors were Amish, very nice folks.
So it'd be interesting.
Very much kept to themselves, of course.
You imagine so.
Yeah, they wouldn't have phones, but they would use.
Or zippers.
Or zippers. That's right.
Well, that's
or
the
automobiles.
They use, they can't own it.
You'd set up a payphone on the corner, and there'd be a line of Amish waiting to use it now. But they wouldn't have one in their house. And you could tell by the way the curtains were hung on the front of the door whether they had a married or an unmarried daughter in there.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, that was a thing. That's right. It was which way it went diagonally told you whether there was a girl there or not.
It's bizarre.
I mean,
it's cultural.
Yeah, well, it's a very strange cultural thing. But so they were nice neighbors, you know, and they, one of the things that I really appreciate was whenever there was a storm, they'd bring their horses and wagons out and pick up every bit of litter. Especially, you know, the usable firewood, because that was the purpose of being out there, but they generally just clean the whole area up while they were at it, you know, and it was just a waste not want not thing. Well, I've tried to take that same attitude, you know, especially when it comes to firewood. I was going to ask the doctor if the fact that I heated with burning wood cooked with it is why I got the problems I've got.
It didn't help.
I never got a chance to do a follow-up interview with my father before he left us, but I hope this interview will help keep his memory alive and to help remind us all to embrace our own adventures, pen our own fearless narratives, and march to the chaotic but beautiful rhythms of our hearts. My dad's spirit may have left this world, but the wildfire of his existence burns on in the hearts of those who knew him, loved him, and were forever changed by his journey. Rest in peace, Michael, the poet of life's saga, the adventurer of our time, and the faithful disciple of the goddess who guided you through the stormy seas. Your words, your love, your essence, they will live on, always.